Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. Stand by for news. I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And we have a busy show for you today. We'll hear from WGXC's Sela Graham and Tom DiPietro talking with Tagayahu Swabi, the founder of the Yod Wellness Center in Catskill. We'll also hear from David Engel, the environmental attorney representing citizens in Hoosick Falls who were poisoned with PFOA. He comes on after the announcement this weekend that Dr. Marcus Martinez, the family doctor from Hoosick Falls, who helped lead the fight to clean up the local water contamination there, died from a rare form of cancer he suspected was linked to his exposure to PFOA in Hoosick Falls. We'll also hear this week's excerpt from the Master Gardeners of Green and Columbia Cornell Cooperative Extension Nature Calls podcast, featuring a conversation with Anna Herod about how to get children interested in gardening. And we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. It all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned. This is the network, network.
This is Mitch Easter of Sneakers, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Acre.
Wave Farms Art Park is now open on Saturdays. Drop in for unannounced guided tours on Saturdays from noon to 6 p.m. or book a tour in advance on other days. Wave Farms' 29-acre campus in Acre is the home of the Art Park with 13 installations in the Study Center, WGXC Acre Studio, the Wave Farms International Artist Residency Program. Visitors on Saturdays receive a guided tour of the campus. Admission is free and tours typically last 60 to 90 minutes. Again, on Saturdays, Wave Farms Art Park is open for drop-in visits anytime from noon to 6 p.m. from June through October. Stop by Wave Farm on Saturdays from noon to 6 p.m.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Sun Common, supporting vibrant communities across New York for over 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Carmen Borgia of Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Joshua Solomon reports for the Times Union that on August 3rd, Governor Kathy Hochul announced $108 million to help schools address learning loss during the COVID-19 pandemic and to support mental health. Hochul said, and I quote, "If we don't give young people support now, it will be irreversible. We are setting them up for a lifetime of dependency," end quote. School officials such as Education Commissioner Betty A. Rosa were enthusiastic, saying, and I quote, "Together we know we can do great things in partnership with the governor. We can provide innovative resources to meet student needs in these unprecedented times," end quote. Schools and cooperative educational services can apply for the funding by August 18th for the first round of the program. 60% of the money is promised to schools outside New York City. Hochul said she heard from a student in the Bronx that there was just one guidance counselor for 700 students with a month-long waiting list. Hochul said, and I quote, "We're going to fix this. We're not going to abandon you," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Andrea Minko reports for Porcupine Soup. Greene County Emergency Medical Services wants a 12.8% funding increase next year, with $2,171,000 from Greene County and $382,000 to be split among the 14 towns there. Funding keeps paramedics in fly cars 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in a county with a large valley and a big mountainous area. When the agency was started in 2000, call volume was less than 800. But Greene County EMS President Mark Evans said, and I quote, "We anticipate in the next year or two we will break 4,000 calls," end quote. Earlier this year, Greene County EMS added 3 ventilators to its fleet, the first regional agency with ventilators. Evans said, and I quote, "They have only been on the trucks for 3 weeks and have already been used 3 times, end quote. The story does not say when Greene County legislators will vote on the funding. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. Jamal Cutler reports in Columbia Green Media that the Catterskills Farm Natural Storehouse health food store in Greenport closes August 31st after 27 years open. Martha Stevenson of Greenport said, and I quote, "I've been coming here for the last 7 years. The prices were fair, and I liked that they made me feel welcome when I walked through the door. It's a shame that so many businesses are closing. First the Salvation Army thrift store, now this," end quote. The store will continue to operate a Catskill location where the 6 Greenpoint employees will be transferred to. Brian McGowan, Chief Executive Officer for Catterskill Farm Natural Storehouse, said, and I quote, "My wife and I started the business back in 1996, and we've grown the business, taken over more space. To be honest, we really wanted to retire by selling the store, but our lease expired at the end of December. Our emails, phone calls, and texts have gone unanswered since the early part of February. They haven't responded to our attorney's email either. For 27 years, we have paid our rent on time every single month. The only thing I can assume is that they don't want us as a tenant anymore," end quote. The landlord, TRG, could not be reached for comment. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Monday, August 7th. We are 60% of the way through the year, still in hot summer. There are 47 days left until the autumnal equinox. And we are getting into the nitty-gritty of hurricane season. Still, though, the better weather seasonal prediction holds out for only 2 major hurricanes this year. Stay tuned. Local early morning temperatures range from 62 degrees in Tannersville to 70 in Kinderhook. Regional average soil temperature is 70 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be low. And I'm sure you know why. We all wake up to a rainy region this morning that continues all day and gets lighter in the afternoon. Temperatures rise steadily, hitting 73 degrees around 5 p.m. Overnight, temperatures don't really drop, hitting only 70 degrees. Rain continues, lasting all day on Tuesday, which we'll see a high of 80. Overnight, rain ends and we get a low of 62 degrees. Wednesday, things dry out and we get a high of 84. Thursday, rain returns and we get a high of 80. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 2:29 a.m., high tide at 8:17 a.m., low tide again at 2:45 p.m., then high tide once again at 8:53 p.m. Today's river temperature will be, I don't know, let's say 75 degrees. Someone go fix that sensor in Skodak, please. Today's tide strength will be average, and I know that because I can compute it from a standardized table. I don't need sensors for it. Sunset today will be at 7:55 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:51 a.m. Looking way up, we see we have a geomagnetic storm watch on for tonight, as two Hadoukens are expected. Plasma winds will be slow at 336 kilometers per second, with a thin density of less than one proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 8 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The current sunspot number is 97. There are no chances for aurora tonight, and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Support for
United Airlines. United provides
support for NPR
in cities like Boston, New York, and Washington, D.C.
Underwriting today is provided
United
by
Airlines,
Sports, Books, and Music, Jutus, Juice Bar Blend, and by Whitney Farms, producers of a complete line of
public radio.
.com.
United provides just another way national business radio is rising. National Public Radio. National Business Radio.
Comes from
United Airlines,
Borders, Books, and Music,
Jutus, Juice Bar Blend.
United provides just another way national business radio is rising.
Public Radio.
National Public Radio. Nonstop Business
Radio. .com.
Public
Radio.
Nonstop Business.
Underwriting today is provided by Inc. to Me. That's Inc. to Me. Scaling.
National Public Radio.
And INKTOMI.com.
National Public Radio.
National
Public Radio. Nonstop Business.
Radio.com.
Public
Radio.
National Public Radio. Nonstop Business.
Radio.com.
Public Radio.com.
Soil Amendments and Mulches.com.
National Public Radio. Radio. Public
Radio.
National Public Radio. Nonstop Business.
Public radio. Well, lots of pretty good news there. Thanks, Joe. That report brought to you by
NationalBusinessRadio.com.
Find the shadows cast by rainbows, there you'll meet the sage. Feeding rabbits bits of lettuce or cleaning out the cage. He can give you more direction than you've ever known. Show you your bronze baby shoes now, my how you have grown. Ain't it nice to fly, you're waving as soft clouds go by, but when you want to go exploring, you got to find some truth.
Greetings. My name is Tagen Yauswebe. You can also just call me Tagen.
Oh, Tagen Yauswebe.
Swaby. The Swabies are big in Jamaica.
Yeah, it's a big
oh, really?
Continent.
Yeah, they call them the light bodies, too.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Did you know that?
Oh,
I did not know that.
You got to see this woman's face light up. Oh, my God.
Yes, yeah, so I'm from Kingston, Jamaica.
So am I.
Funky Kingston.
And I came up when I was about 13, so I've been here now.
So 10 years older than I was. So I came at 3.
Oh, wow.
But I was in Canada first, and then we came over. Yeah.
Well, that's actually how my mom came in.
Yeah.
To Canada.
Yeah.
My mom came through Canada illegally.
So now you're in Catskill?
No, we're in Catskill, yes.
And
legally.
Legally.
Hey, who cares?
I got my papers.
I got my papers.
They can't get me out no more.
And you got a business.
Yes, sir.
And what's the nature of that business?
So in Jamaica, the word that we use for home mm-hmm. is my yard.
Mm-hmm. My yard.
Right? Like yard.
My God, yard.
Yeah. And so yard means Jamaica. Yard actually means Jamaica. But if you're in Jamaica and somebody said, yo, me I go on my yard, it means I'm going to go home.
Yeah.
So Yard Wellness is a wellness space located in Catskill on Main Street. I'm in the former Catskill Community Center.
It's a big space. It's a good space. Good energy.
344. Mm-hmm. 344 Main Street in Catskill.
Mm-hmm.
And you're also going to have your second anniversary party.
Yes, we're going to have a second anniversary party. We've been open since August of 2021.
Wow.
This is a business that came out of
the pandemic.
And it was born out of a need that I saw of, which was happening in Brooklyn before I moved up, of, you know, being able to get people together.
Yeah. Right.
You know, because
community.
Yes. So you say it. And it's also, it wasn't my intention to occupy the Catskill Community Center, but that's just how it happened. The one space that was on Main Street that could accommodate us mm-hmm. was the Catskill Community Center.
Which means that you can grow.
Yes. That means we're already you know, in this vein of growth and of bringing people together and of creating community.
Yeah.
And this happened at a time when, you know, community had been very fractured. I know it's very fresh, the pandemic, but, you know, many of us can. Many people are still in quarantine. Yeah. I know people who now will never come out of quarantine.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah, I do too, actually.
And I feel like it's affected all of our mental health in a way that we're still kind of like even, you know, just now getting used to it. I remember there was a time during the last 2 years, every time I'd watch a movie, I'd be like, they're not wearing masks, you know?
Because movies even started to film with masks now, with people wearing the masks.
Right.
Yeah.
It's really something.
And there there are still people wearing masks, and that always reminds me of like, oh, maybe I should think about wearing a mask now and then.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I definitely puts a question mark as to what is the mask's purpose now?
Right.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
What is the
mask's
purpose?
Protecting yourself. You're protecting yourself. You're protecting other people. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Right.
It is.
I had an awkward experience yesterday. I was at Rev Coffee Shop, where the woman behind the counter wears a mask.
Yeah. That's excellent.
Right. Someone came in and said, "Why are you wearing a mask?"
Oh my goodness.
Oh no.
And she was like, "What?"
Yeah.
Like what? How? And the funny thing is, she wasn't even there to buy coffee. It was very weird.
This is what people do, because, you know, like for me, the most refreshing part of the pandemic was the ability to have food service workers actually wear protective.
Yeah. But this is a common theme of our show. We're both fairly neurotic about public food.
No, it's true, because, you know, ate in my car. I just had some stew chicken and some mac and cheese from Cruz's birthday.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, where would I even be able to get this? And if I got it, would I eat it?
Yeah. No. It's a real thing. So many great things have come out of this, you know, of the last 3 years, you know, this thing. And it's really shifted our lives. It's really shifted our mentality. Mm-hmm. It's really shifted the way we think about things.
Look at what we're wearing. Look, we all have masks on our microphones
right now.
I know,
there's a mask on our microphone, you know. But, you know, now we're kind of coming back. We're seeing things coming back to how they used to be. But
sort of.
I think it'll never really come back fully.
Your response basically has been to create this wellness center.
Yeah.
Right?
A space for people to come together, essentially. And to bring back this whole idea of even coming together.
Mm-hmm.
And within that, you're also providing wellness.
Yes. So I'm a licensed acupuncturist.
Ah, okay. Yeah, that's what I was going to get at. What kind of things?
I'm a licensed acupuncturist, and I'm also a martial artist. Ooh. I've been practicing martial arts.
Capoeira, right?
I do capoeira, and I also do an internal martial art called Qigong.
Oh.
And I've been doing this now for the last 10 years. I've been doing capoeira now for, 21 years.
Did you have to go to Brazil for the training? Or
I used to live in Brazil.
I figured.
Ah. I lived in Brazil for two.
Does Shannon Greer work with you at all? Do you know Shannon?
I know Shannon. Oh. Yeah. But I don't know if Shannon has been to Brazil. Because
I know he does.
But Shannon is into BJJ.
Right.
Yeah. And that's how I know Shannon.
Oh, okay. Because I think I've seen him. I've seen a picture of you on his. You know, he posts on Instagram a lot of his.
Oh, really?
His stuff.
Yeah, so Shannon is actually a friend of a friend, and Shannon I met finally at shout out to the Firehouse in Catskill, Firehouse Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu,
mm-hmm.
which is run by the one PJ Benekish, and he's there, and that's how we met.
Got it.
That's how we met Shannon, and Shannon is also a good friend of some other friends of mine in Brooklyn.
And you do the Brazilian, what's it called again?
Capoeira.
Yeah,
capoeira.
So I've been practicing capoeira Angola for the last 21 years. And wow. If you all don't know what it is, capoeira Angola is it's a liberation art form.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I mean by that is the narrative around it is that it was used and it was disguised
as a dance.
Mm-hmm. And it was a means, you know, many years ago when the captured people of Africa were in Brazil, how they could come together and how they could actually escape. And it has and we now see that this means or this desire to escape from oppression continues till today.
Today.
You know, so Capoeira Angola is still very much alive and still very much used. It's now spread all over the entire world.
Yeah.
Wow. And it's a great way of bringing people together. Mm-hmm. So everywhere I've traveled in the world, including Jamaica,
mm-hmm.
there is capoeira.
Yeah,
which is.
So do you teach this at various levels? Or
yeah, I teach at all levels.
Yeah, cool.
I teach all levels, and I've been teaching now for the last, I'd say, 11 years. What year is it? No, since 2009.
Wow.
You know.
So you got acupuncture there. You got capoeira
and qigong.
And Qigong.
Oh, but there's also many other things.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So if you haven't already, I would invite you to check out the Yod Wellness website, yodwellness.com.
Oh, okay. That's simple enough. Yod Y-A-A-D.
Yes.
Wellness.
Yod Wellness. Y-A-A-D wellness.com. There are many different classes there. Another purpose of the space was to create a space for people to come and practice. Because when I arrived here in the Hudson Valley, I was not aware of a space that was being provided for healing arts practitioners.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Where they could actually do their thing. You
right.
know?
Right. And in fact, on this side of the river, there's been some sponsorship for these things, but it's mainly been happening at the library.
Yep.
At Little
Debs.
Yeah.
Yep. A couple
so
other places.
So it's been sparse.
It's sparse, but it's like scattered all over the place. Yeah. There's not a single kind of wellness place, is there? I don't think
but
so.
But that's how these things start. You know, that's how you start seeding them all over. Yeah. It's almost like speakeasies.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, I mean, just the idea of us coming together was such taboo in the last.
I like that shirt, by the way.
Thank you. In the last 2 years, it was so taboo. So just us getting together now is just is an act of revolution.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, us getting together, us, you know, learning together.
Yeah.
And this is what Yod Wellness has been about, and it's been a great place for these other healing arts practitioners to come. We also have our friend Shar Azad that does somatics therapy. We have a belly dance class.
Wow.
We have a tango class.
Who teaches the belly dance?
Oh, belly dance is taught by my good friend Mirto.
Okay.
Mirto,
you want to take belly dance?
No,
Tom?
Just I know a Catskill person does belly dance.
Okay.
I thought maybe she taught it.
So yeah, so you know, we have belly dance, we have tango, we also at one point we had a Congolese dance class there.
Something happened. Hold on.
What?
Can you still hear me?
I can. Okay. It's
check
me
check
then.
Check.
Tom kicks something every time he moves his foot. Man, you can't keep still.
I don't know. Well, see. Okay.
Right. How is now?
I can hear you.
I can hear you.
Yeah.
I can hear you in here, but I can't hear you on this. So, but go ahead. Yeah. Mm. The RPMs are there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and we're also, you know, always open to the idea of other people coming and practicing. So there's mm-hmm. people who rent the space just to dance.
So it's also open for rentals for practitioners.
Yes. Okay. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And other dancers and performers. And it's been filling up, to be totally honest.
Your calendar's
with you.
Been getting booked up?
Yes.
That's great.
Yes,
as it should.
It's getting very filled up because I think there's definitely a need for people to have a space to, you know, to just be.
Yeah, use their craft, learn, and be in a place where the energy's right.
Yes, exactly. Right? And that is something that we are continually working on. So just to say a little bit about that is that we want to, you know, honor the Mohican people of this land that came before us. And when I first landed in Catskill, you know, I'm from Jamaica, born and raised. But when I came up here, you know, after living in Brooklyn for over 20 years.
Which is a very different. I grew up in Flatbush. I grew up and I moved here.
Here we go.
I was going back and forth with my mom and my siblings until the age of 13 or 14. And then she decided to just say, you know what, enough of Brooklyn, enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we made the transition up here. And I could definitely feel that there was something going on. Like something energetically is there, you know, and I couldn't really put my finger on it.
Yeah.
Something, it made me think about the fact that Catskill itself is located between the Hudson and the Catskill Creek. Mm-hmm. So there's two bodies of water.
Right.
Uh-huh. So it's kind of like an island, kind of right? You know, and
there's bridges on either side.
Yes, there's bridges on either side. You know, historically, places that are surrounded by water, there's often a more of a disposition to mental imbalance, which you see in Jamaica. I mean,
yeah, you see a lot of that.
I mean, you see the map on the street.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it's also vitamin D over there, but yeah. Too much vitamin D, they say. It's almost like you get drunk. Sun drunk, they call it.
I need to get sun drunk.
Because even in California, they have that problem. They said people start to act like they're cannibals.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
So this ridiculous indictment against us, it's not a legal case. It's an act of desperation by a failed and disgraced crooked Joe Biden and his radical left thugs to preserve their grip on power.
At an Alabama Republican dinner, former President Donald Trump attacked his latest indictment. The charges from Special Counsel Jack Smith argued Trump and six unnamed co-conspirators organized a violent insurrection on January 6th in an attempt to keep him in power. Trump pled not guilty and says the criminal case actually helps him politically. A New York Times poll shows more than half of Republicans would vote for Trump again, with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis in distant second. Justice Elena Kagan says she welcomes Supreme Court Ethics Code legislation now in the Senate. Kagan disagreed with Justice Samuel Alito, saying Congress does have the right to regulate the court, even as it's typically been self-regulating.
The court has acted voluntarily to subject itself to various rules. And one of the things that the Chief Justice sent to Congress this past spring was a statement that all nine of us signed that talked about all the rules that we do follow, that we have decided to follow.
In the last year, confidence in the court has fallen as numerous press reports show Justices Clarence Thomas and Neil Gorsuch accepting multiple gifts from conservative political donors. Thomas's wife, Ginny, also coordinated with people connected to January 6th, and an internal investigation failed to name who leaked an early copy of the Dobbs decision overturning Roe v. Wade. The American Civil Liberties Union, performers, and advocates are suing Texas over a new law banning drag performances. Brian Klosterboer with the ACLU says the law is so vague that it's unconstitutional because it could apply to any entertainment perceived as potentially sexual.
From Shakespeare plays to Broadway musicals to karaoke nights. And we know that this is another thinly veiled attempt to push LGBTQIA+ Texans out of public life.
Proponents like Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick say the law would keep the left from further degrading society and would prevent children from being sexualized. The two sides are set to start oral arguments before Utah Supreme Court in an ongoing lawsuit against a state abortion ban. A law already on the books could go into effect with the overturning of Roe, although the ban is currently blocked by a temporary injunction. Catherine Boyd with the Planned Parenthood Association of Utah says if it takes effect, it'll create chaos for marginalized communities.
The oral arguments are not about the case itself. This is more about making sure that law stays enjoined as the case winds its way through the court systems.
A recent Gallup poll shows nearly 70% of Americans think first trimester abortions should be legal. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. Notable court cases brought by Arizona election deniers during and after the 2022 midterms have had decisions in the last few weeks. It didn't go well for the election deniers. KJZZ reports that last month, a federal court ordered the legal team for former gubernatorial candidate and Trump acolyte Carrie Lake to pay $122,000 in sanctions. The judge found that Lake's lawyers had made false claims in a frivolous lawsuit attempting to block the use of ballot tabulation machines in the November 2022 elections. Most of the case was dismissed in August of 2022 and the final claim in December. Another of Lake's cases, which claimed irregularities in Maricopa County, was also dismissed as baseless earlier this year. Sanctions were requested by the county attorney, but waived by the judge. Lake's not done, however. July 14th, she appealed the Maricopa County decision to the Arizona Supreme Court. Then last week, fellow Arizona election denier and former candidate for Secretary of State, Mark Finchem, dropped his appeal of his midterm loss, but not the appeal of the $48,000 in sanctions for pursuing a case with no legal merit. We have links to the great local reporting on these cases at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal. Find us on Facebook at American Democracy Minute.
To stay, I'll be around today to be available for you to see. I'm about to go, and then you'll know for me to stay. I got to be me. You'll never be in doubt, that's what it's all about. You can't take me for granted and smile. Calvin, please. I promise I'll be gone for a while. When you see me again, I hope that you have been the kind of person that you really are now. We got to get in straight. How could I ever be late when you're my woman taking up my time? Oh, oh, how could you ever allow? I wonder how I would get out of pocket. Fun, ha, ha, when you know that you're never number two. Number one, gonna be number one. I'll be good, I wish I could. I get this message over to you now. You shape me again. I hope that you have been the kind of person you really are now. I'll be so good. I wish I could get the message over to you now.
French jazz guitarist Jean Lepouge started teaching himself to play at age 13, and we'll hear him joined by a drummer and a cellist on the next Deep Threes. Plus music from Matoma, Nora Lorway, Holly Herndon, and Nick Stark. Deep Threes, where will the music take you?
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Next, we're going to hear from the Master Gardeners at the Cornell Cooperative Extension. They have a podcast called Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. And each week on WGXC, we'll hear different segments from the show focused on local gardening and gardening for the time of year it is.
Here we are again at Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. Gardening with kids is a wonderful thing to do, but it can be daunting if you think about it too much. Anna Herod McGrew is with us today to help demystify this process. Welcome, Anna. Before we start, could you fill us in on your job title and how that makes you an expert on this topic?
Thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be here. I am the 4-H Natural Resources Educator, so I work primarily in 4-H, but I overlap a little bit with our Natural Resources Department. I'm not sure that I'm an expert in anything, but I'm very good at finding out information and sharing that with kids.
That's half the battle, definitely.
There's an answer to every question, even if it's, I don't know.
Okay, I guess it's not really scary to think about gardening with kids. What I mean is it's easy to start with some seeds and somewhere to plant them. They don't lose interest for at least 45 minutes. How do you keep them engaged beyond that?
Gardening is a great activity to do with kids because it's so hands-on, and it takes that need of an educator to capture their attention, and it's built into the lesson plan, essentially. Kids, even if they initially are a little timid about dirt or insects, once they get into it, it's hard to pull them away. So gardening, whether they're, we sent one of the examples of programs that we did is a lot of kids couldn't access their gardens during the pandemic. It just wasn't allowed. So we were sending kits. We were partnering with Friends of Claremont to create these gardening kits that we would then send in. And each child in the classroom would receive a kit and it'd have some sort of gardening surprise. And they started to look at it as like a gift they would receive each month. But we did one that was a turnip that was locally grown that they could carve, because I don't know if you know this, the original jack-o'-lantern was actually a carved turnip. We did microgreens growing and just like a little, essentially a strawberry container that had been cleaned out, a little bit of soil and some seeds and a little spritz bottle that they could grow, but just individual bags. But anything you give them that they really can dig into and explore and dissect on their own, they get very excited about. And so I feel like with gardening, that's one of the easiest things to teach in terms of holding kids' attention, because they get right into it and they get more and more curious as they go along. They have questions. They want to move on to the next stage. So it's actually an easy one to capture kids' attention.
So if you're at home and you're gardening with your kids, what do you think are kind of the best things to start with? Seed growing, seeds in a milk container, or out in the garden planting plants? What do you think is kind of the best way to start?
I think it depends on the space that you have, but gardening can come in all shapes and sizes, right? It can be a small plant that you have that you care for, or it can be a large garden in your backyard. The easiest thing that we've done with kids is maybe microgreens in terms of a guaranteed or a high rate of success. You can even use a recycled. If you buy strawberries, save the container, put some soil on the bottom, sprinkle your seeds densely in the microgreens, and then just kind of spritz them, close that top, allow for some airflow, and that's an easy activity. We also did paper white bulbs. That's another great, very rewarding activity to do with kids. We sent kits with two paper white bulbs into classrooms and two containers and then soil and rocks so they could see how they grow differently in different mediums. And then we also sent some information to the teachers about research that Cornell did about stunting paper white growths. If anyone's grown
vodka.
Paper whites, yes, it's vodka. So if you use a 1-to-10 solution of vodka to water, it will keep a paper white much shorter, and so it won't grow as tall and flop over. So we left that to the teachers to decide if they wanted to do, with us not suggesting a vodka or tequila, as I've used, but rubbing alcohol for the second graders, you know. But for adults on the podcast, yes, tequila or vodka keeps your paper white short.
I never knew this. I think I was using the tequila and vodka for other things. What about you, Jane?
Yeah, well, I was wondering if you warned the teachers about the aroma. Because to a lot of people, they smell like dead rats.
Mm. Oh, paper whites?
Mm.
I don't, but I enjoy the smell of paper whites. So that might be personal preference.
A Okay, since you're involved in 4-H in the schools, why don't you fill us in on some of the basic things that 4-H does besides gardens?
So 4-H stands for Head, Heart, Hands, and Health. And historically, it's been looked at as, my boss and I like to joke, cows and cooking.
Yeah.
And what's been continuous about 4-H is that it's always been hands-on, active learning. Our motto, one of our mottos, is learn by doing. So that's always continued. But I wouldn't say we've moved away from agriculture education, but instead of that being kind of the sole focus of 4-H, we've definitely moved into promoting youth development as a whole within schools, after-school programs. We have a lot of STEM curriculum that we either have camps that kids can attend, national conventions kids can attend, or we have kits that we can provide to clubs in our area, to school groups. So STEM is a major piece of what we do. But kind of the four pillars are our agriculture, still very much a part, but we've moved into working on healthy living, civic engagement, and STEM. And those are kind of our four pillars right now. But that learn by doing is really that basis of 4-H.
I just love going to the Caro Youth Fair. Have you been to that?
This year was my first year going to the fairs. Oh. I was hired in 2019, so I missed
the
first round of fairs. Yeah. So it was nice to be able to join in this past year. And you get to see all the projects the kids have worked on.
Oh, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's amazing. The animals they've raised.
So it's a whole competitive thing with the animals. I know that kids win prizes at the Youth County Fair. Is there a similar element with gardening, like the biggest pumpkin or tomato competition or anything like that?
They do. So they can present their projects. It's a slightly different category than their animals, the animals that they're showing at the fair. So they can present a project, and that includes both decorative pieces like floral arrangements or house plants, and they can also present any vegetables that they've grown throughout the year. So if they're really proud of their eggplants, they can present those, their peppers, their pumpkins. And then sometimes we'll have contests for the biggest pumpkin. Or during 2020, when there were no fairs, we did a plant-to-plate contest. So they decided to grow three things that they would then cook once they were grown. And we had a lot of kids growing basil and tomatoes and then making a delicious spaghetti sauce that they then sent photos in of. So we do try to do prizes along the way related to gardening.
And is there a connection between gardening and then, I know there's a lot of forestry study here, taking the kids into the model forest, and tell us a little bit about that.
We're trying to grow our forestry program a little bit more, and we've had a bit of a hiatus in being able to take students into the model forest. But beyond gardening education, I do our natural resources education. So we do have a fair amount of school groups that hopefully will return to the model forest. But we were just starting to do a lot of education in the model forest, where schools would come after school and do programs throughout the year. Or we do have our environmental awareness days in the model forest as well for Greene County. And those happen every fall for Greene County. And we try to get all the sixth graders from all the school districts to come. In 2020, we obviously weren't able to do it. We did bring it back last year, but only with one school, so we're hoping to grow that in the future years.
Like a bio blitz or something like
very
that.
Very similar, yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah, they scoop for macroinvertebrates. They'll learn about tree ID. We had a beekeeper come. Yeah, we have all sorts of amazing, amazing, talented volunteers that come and share their knowledge with the kids.
That's a pretty awesome thing. Okay, are there differences in approach between urban and country schools, like the attitudes of the kids or the novelty of fresh produce?
I haven't noticed too much of a difference. I think the main piece I've noticed is if kids grow up growing things, if they grow up on a farm or if they grow up with a garden, their familiarity with fresh produce, with growing things, you know, they've had it around them their whole lives, and so it just is very familiar to them. And they know things naturally, and they know the process. Even if they've never thought about that process, they've seen it done so many times that they know, you know, put the soil in the pot, put this much soil in, put the seed in, you need to water it. And so I think the disconnect comes with if you work with kids that have truly never grown anything, they really don't know. And they've never grown up anything from seed. And so you do have to go through every step because it's all brand new. And fresh produce, I think, is a noticeable difference. Anybody that grows up with a garden, it's just right there for them, versus growing up in a more urban environment where it's you just don't have the same access to it.
Like kids with cucumbers, when they pick one off the bush, they go, "Wah, it's got stuff all over it," and you have to scrape off the little barbs. They have no idea that they were going to be there.
Yeah, it's always amazing to see a kid witness a plant growing for the first time, because I feel like this is true with adults, too, that we don't always consider how something grows. Like artichokes. I remember seeing an artichoke growing for the first time and being very surprised that it's coming up in the middle of a plant on a stalk. And I'd never thought about it, so I didn't have an idea in my head of how it grew, but it surprised me nonetheless when I saw it for the first time.
That was an excerpt of an interview from the Nature Calls Conversations from the Hudson Valley podcast from the Master Gardeners of the Cornell Cooperative Extension for Columbia and Greene Counties. You can hear the full episode at the Cornell Cooperative Extension webpage or in the WGXC archives at WGXC.org or at CCEColumbiaGreene.org.
You are invited to join me upon the Cypress Bough. Music from North Africa, West and Central Asia. First Monday of every month, 8 to 10 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM and WGXC.org.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're talking to David Engel, an environmental attorney, and we asked David to give us some reflections on the life of Dr. Marcus Martinez, who is one of the leaders in the effort in Hoosic Falls to deal with the problem of exposure of local residents and their contaminated drinking water from the forever chemical PFOA. It was particularly Dr. Martinez who worked with Michael Hickey, one of his longtime patients. I should mention that Dr. Martinez's father was also the local family doctor for many years for the local residents. David, what was your experience, reflections of Dr. Marcus Martinez?
Well, my relationship with Dr. Martinez began in early January 2015. I received some telephone calls from Hoosick the prior month when the PFOA matter first came to light. And a couple of people called me, and they all were of the opinion that I should meet with Dr. Martinez and, as well as with Michael Hickey. And as you may recall, the problem came to light when Michael Hickey, reflecting on the death of his own father from kidney cancer and the seemingly abundant number of cancer cases and other medical problems in Hoosick Falls, on his own tested the water and found elevated levels of PFOA. He collected samples and sent them to a qualified lab. And of course, he brought this to the attention of Dr. Martinez. And at the time, this was, as I say, I first met them in January of 2015. So it was 8.5 years ago. Dr. Martinez was 42 at the time. And he had cancer and he was quite ill. And he and Michael came into my office to sit down and meet with me and a couple other attorneys in my office to tell me the story of what they had found and what the situation was in Hoosick Falls. And that's how I first became involved. Following that meeting, we tried to figure out a way to deal with this problem. Dr. Martinez was of the opinion that the problem had to be solved. When he found the results, or he became aware of the results of Michael's testing, he went into the literature, and the literature was abundant with concerns about PFOA and health effects. That's where we started. I could go on about that tale for the length of this interview, but I don't think you want me to.
Well, I mean, you know, I think most people are familiar that PFOA, forever chemical, was, you know, used by one of the local manufacturers in Hoosick Falls. And you mentioned that Michael Hickey went out after his father died. And, you know, both Michael and Marcus tried to convince the town, I guess, village supervisor to do water sampling. And initially they sort of refused, and so they had to go out and do it on their own. How did the fact that Dr. Martinez, with his father before him, was sort of the, you know, the town or village family doctor, you know, how did that help in terms of, you know, getting local residents to believe there really was a serious problem?
Well, Dr. Martinez was a very warm, engaging individual, and he, I think, paid extraordinary attention to his patients. He was a very likable man, and he had credibility. You know, sometimes you go to the doctor and you get the sense that the doctor is doing you a favor by giving you 10 or 15 or 20 minutes of their time, you know, but he was on a first name basis with seemingly everyone in the community. I remember vividly being out to dinner with him early on this whole epic, and some youngster who was still in high school stopped by our table and began to engage him in discussion. And Dr. Martinez, or Marcus as he was known, he knew this young kid, and the young man referred to Dr. Martinez as Marcus, and that's the way he was, you know, friendly and engaging. And as I stated earlier, from the time I met him, he was dealing with his own rare form of cancer. He never, to the best of my knowledge, or certainly not in my dealings with him, you know, wallowed in self-pity or despair. It was always about getting things done and looking out for his community, which is a tremendous attribute. We don't have enough people like that.
And this was a multi-year effort. This was not the situation where, you know, the county or state health department, DEC, the village, you know, saw the test results and said, oops, there's a problem here. We're immediately going to take action. This was a long-time effort to try to convince various government officials to take this seriously. And I guess eventually, you know, litigation.
When the results first came to light and they were brought to the mayor went to the Department of Health, and the Department of Health's first response was, why are you testing for these things? You're in a community that is so small, you don't need to test for these types of substances. That viewpoint was born out of the belief that certain substances, even if they had health effects, would have them so infrequently within the population that if you had a population the size of Hoosick Falls of about 3,500, you would never see the health effects. It didn't take long, once one became aware of the problem, to go into the literature and see there was abundant information as to the health effects, and the size of the community was largely irrelevant. What we did in that first year was we created a group called Healthy Hoosick Water, and Marcus was the head of that group. We were attempting to figure out a way to both engage the mayor and engaged Saint-Gobain, which was the company operating in Hoosick, to do something about this. And at the same time, I know Marcus did not want to get in an adversarial position vis-a-vis the village. You know, I think he had a community, but he knew the problem had to be addressed. And I know he made numerous overtures to then Mayor David Borge over the course of much of 2015. And frankly, Mayor Borge would not engage in the subject. He was taking his lead from the company. And he even went so far as to suggest that maybe the PFOA was not the responsibility of Saint-Gobain, whereas, you know, it was evident from the get-go that that's where the PFOA was coming from, principally the plant on McCaffrey Street in the village. Ultimately, what we did was we sent a RCRA notice letter to Saint-Gobain threatening them with a lawsuit. their representatives came up to Albany and they met with Marcus and me and some of my colleagues in, I believe it was late October of 15. We had an immediate demand that they provide bottled water. We wanted a replacement water system, and we also wanted a GAC filter put on the existing water system. And in that initial meeting, they said that they were considering putting a GAC filter in or paying for it, but they would not do bottled water, and they saw no need to replace the existing water source. Within a couple of weeks thereafter, they did a sea change on that, and they agreed to a bottled water plan.
So we only have about 30 seconds left. Any final observations about Dr. Martinez?
You know, he was a very kind, caring man. You know, he was the face of the whole cause to bring the village of Hoosick Falls clean water. He came up with the name Healthy Hoosick Water. We went through a lot of battles together. He was remarkably of good cheer and of, positive outlook throughout, notwithstanding the illness that he was dealing with.
Well, thank you very much. We're out of time. We've been talking with environmental attorney David Engel about Dr. Marcus Martinez, who unfortunately recently passed away from cancer. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.